From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura, and this is The Exchange. It's been an interesting primary season here in the Granite State with lively Republican contests for the four top races. But in the end, those candidates perceived as front runners all along did win their contests. In the most closely watched primary race for U.S. Senate, former Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown far outpolled his GOP rivals last night and turned his attention to the general election and incumbent Senator Jeanne Shaheen.
The problem is a vote for my opponent will change exactly nothing. Nobody in the Senate is more invested in the policies and failures of President Obama than Senator Shaheen.
In the other statewide race for governor, Walt Havenstein also had a solid win over his Republican opponent and also shifted his focus to the Democrat he hopes to unseat.
We cannot afford two more years of Maggie Hassan. We have an economic development plan and strategy. We have the energy to pull it off.
The Republican primaries for our two congressional districts featured multiple candidates and some key differences among them. But the winners of those primaries last night both issued calls for unity. First district nominee Frank Ginta said voters need to come together and send a message to Washington.
Start thinking about people again. Start thinking about the needs of communities across the state of New Hampshire. Start thinking about those families who wonder where their next paycheck is going to come from, and get serious about solutions and ideas.
And in the second congressional district, where the GOP primary was seen as particularly bitter, winner Marilinda Garcia also told supporters that when Republicans unify, they can accomplish the most.
So I'd ask all of you to reach out, and everything that you did to help me get to this point, please do that for all of us running on this ticket, because together we can really make a difference and stop what has become an adversarial federal government.
Today in The Exchange, primary results and how they'll shape New Hampshire's general elections less than 2 months away. Let's hear from you this hour. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Dante Scala, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH, a fellow at UNH's Carsey School of Public Policy. And Dante, thanks for making time out. We appreciate it.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us in studio, Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter. Josh, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Kathleen Ronayne, State House reporter for the Concord Monitor. And Kathleen, yesterday was busy. Appreciate you taking the time today.
No problem, Laura.
Well, all of you, but to you, Josh, first, your overall reaction to these results from the primaries, and we'll get into the details in a minute.
Well, good night for the better established candidate, the better finance candidates, and surprisingly large margins for all these folks. Scott Brown looks like he's cracked 50%. Walt Havenstein, who had not always run strong on the campaign trail, beating Hemingway pretty easily, and Ginta surviving, and Marilinda Garcia really routing former Senator Gary Lambert from Nashua, a surprisingly large margin.
Yeah, I had the same reaction, Josh, that the margins in most of these races weren't even close. Dante Scala, how about you? Your broad thoughts.
Yeah, certainly a good night for the New Hampshire Republican establishment. There's been a lot of talk over the past several months of possible upsets. As Josh mentioned, to Walt Havenstein, you know, Andrew Hemingway's Tea Party insurgency fizzled out. Dan Innes, in the first district, tried to unseat a former congressman who was running for reelection. That didn't work out. So, you know, for all the talk about a civil war within the Republican Party nationally and so forth, it's been the same old for the New Hampshire Republican Party. Some challenges, but no big surprises last night that the Republican establishment has to worry about the next day.
Kathleen, how about you?
Yeah, I think that we expected most of these results. The one that did surprise me a little bit was how much Marilinda Garcia won by in the second district. I thought that was going to be a lot closer, but you know, from the beginning, Brown, even Havenstein, they've been kind of focusing on a general election message. So this is now the chance for them to get maybe what was a distraction of the primary out of the way and continue to focus that message 100% on Jean Shaheen and Maggie Hassan, who, you know, both came out swinging against their opponents last night. So the general election contest has already begun.
Well, and we will set that up for sure this hour. You can join us, too, with your questions, 1-800-892-6477. Questions, comments, thoughts about last night's primary election results and how they'll shape the races for November, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange at nhpr.org. And let's spend a little bit more time focusing just on that U.S. Senate primary race. It was real interesting, Josh. You know, started off with a lot of speculation about whether Scott Brown would get in. But while people were waiting to see what he would do, two other candidates competed. Bob Smith, a former U.S. senator from New Hampshire. Is this the last hurrah for Senator Smith, former Senator Smith, Josh?
I think it's safe to say it's often one predicts his behavior at one's own risk, but he said this is his final campaign. And it was interesting to see two former U.S. senators compete in a primary. Jim Rubens was in there, and you know, Scott Brown was eyeing this race for a while, and Republican folks in D.C. and New Hampshire, establishment people, leaders in the party, you know, were pleased that Scott Brown joined the party. They joined this race. You know, they know that beating Jean Shaheen, even in the current political dynamic, is a stiff challenge. And Scott Brown will have the resources, the name recognition that perhaps gives them the best chance and held the greatest possibility of lifting the entire ticket, which is something that was a focus as well.
Well, let's hear from former Senator Smith, and then we will hear from Scott Brown and Jim Rubens, the other major candidate in this race. But here's Bob Smith again, longtime office holder here in New Hampshire, conceding defeat last night to Scott Brown.
And this is the way it's supposed to be. The voters are supposed to pick the winner. Sometimes we forget that in politics, but that's what it's supposed to be, and that's what happened tonight. I accept their decision, and we'll move on from there.
All right. Again, we're talking about last night's primary results and getting your questions and comments in. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also chime in on Facebook or Twitter. What do you think about this Bob Smith, Dante Scala? It's sort of his last, I don't want to say last stand, but he sounds done. What do you think?
It's hard to see where he goes from here, and it also reflects on the state of the Tea Party, so to speak, in the state of New Hampshire. I think what you saw was that there were a good number of voters looking for an alternative to Scott Brown. I mean, Jim Rubens and Bob Smith together won almost half of the vote last night, but the two represented very different factions, I believe, of the Republican Party, and Bob Smith, I think, represented more than anything else, older Tea Party voters, which makes a lot of sense because in some ways, Bob Smith was the Tea Party before we called it such, even when he was a sitting senator from the state of New Hampshire. That said, you know, again, he failed in Florida in a couple of Senate bids. He's failed back in his home state. Hard to see where he goes from here.
Kathleen, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that to Dante's point that they represented two very different factions of the party, I think throughout the primary, it had been Rubens and Smith kind of fighting with each other to be that Brown alternative. And the results really showed us perfectly that neither of them was able to do that successfully because I think they both got around 22-23% of the vote. So I wonder what the results might have looked like had one of them dropped out earlier. Obviously, you know, that's a hypothetical question and we'll never know. But I think that, you know, I was hoping we might get a little more clarity on which, you know, kind of wing of the party that was anti-Scott Brown had a little bit more sway or influence. But we really saw that neither one of those two could become the Brown alternative that each so desperately wanted to be. It just didn't work out for them.
Yeah, and early on, both of them kind of hoped the other would drop out, fearing results just like what we saw last night. Well, it was a big victory for former Massachusetts U.S. Senator Scott Brown. Let's hear what he said last night in his victory speech.
We have an $18 trillion national debt almost. We have, plus the interest, we have no way to pay for it. The numbers can seem unreal, but it's very real money. And where is it going? It's not really Gail and me and you. It's our kids, like Sienna, our grandkids. That's who's going to be affected by this. That's not responsible. It's not fair.
So Scott Brown in his victory speech last night, focusing on the national debt, Dante. So I guess that's going to be a theme we hear from Scott Brown.
Yeah, we'll certainly hear about fiscal issues. And Scott Brown is, as Republicans up here among the elites readily agreed, was a good fit to run against Jean Shaheen, someone who adopts fiscally conservative but socially moderate stances. So I think that's why, plus really the absence of any credible alternative, that's why the Republican elites flocked to him early on. And to his credit, I think Brown didn't take New Hampshire Republicans for granted. He and his campaign did a lot of the little things that make a grassroots campaign in New Hampshire, and I think that contributed to his success last night, that even people who weren't crazy about him were willing enough to accept him.
He didn't just jump in and say, hey, I'm the front runner and elect me. He did a lot of grassroots campaigning. Other themes, Josh, that we heard from Scott Brown throughout his primary campaign?
Well, we have heard from the start his opposition to so-called Obamacare and his casting of that issue as Jean Shaheen having made the deciding vote to pass it, in that it, you know, passed with such a narrow margin. We're going to hear more of that. We're going to hear a critique of President Obama's foreign policy. But on every issue, basically, it's going to be Jean Shaheen yoked to Barack Obama. He'll call her his number one foot soldier, a rubber stamp. He will cast himself as, you know, independent voice who will work every day for the people of New Hampshire. I don't expect it to get terribly subtle. That's what we're going to hear.
Yeah, and there's two numbers that jump out that we've already heard from former Senator Brown, right, Josh? One is Jean Shaheen votes 99% of the time with Barack Obama. The other one is, I'm a 50% guy. What's he trying to say there?
Well, you know, he didn't actually use that number last night, but he's trying to say, I'm, you know, captive to no party, and I will vote for my constituents. His record in Massachusetts suggests that a good deal of the time he did vote with Democrats. It'll be interesting to see, should he get elected, if that that's still the case. If he represents New Hampshire on the campaign trail, he says that's what he intends to do.
All right. Well, a lot more to focus on after a short break. We'll talk about the primary for governor, also those two primaries in our two congressional districts, and we'll look at how all these results shape November's general elections. We'll also hear from you, so stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the primary is over, the general election season has begun, and we're looking closer at the results from yesterday's primary and what happens next. Let's get your thoughts in, too. Your questions and comments are welcome. 1-800-892-6477. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests are Josh Rogers, NHPR senior political reporter, Kathleen Ronayne, State House reporter for the Concord Monitor, and Dante Scala, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH. And all of you, let's go to our listeners now. And Jonathan's calling from Manchester. Hi, Jonathan. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
I kind of predicted Scott would get through, since he was really the only name you heard much about. But it still shocks me that the New Hampshire GOP, with such a strong history, had to look outside our borders to really get somebody to represent the state. And then you listen to his acceptance speech, and, you know, he brought up the national debt, pretty much implying a lot of austerity votes. And yet, when he was in there for Massachusetts, he voted for a lot of corporate support for Koch brothers' interests and big oil. But his austerity is apparently just to the little people. But it's fascinating that the state GOP still doesn't have anyone local homegrown. I mean, Gene has been elected here how many times? She's a powerful lady, you know.
Well, that'll certainly be the argument that she'll be making. In fact, in a speech she gave, right, Josh, last night, she said, look, I'm homegrown, kind of like our caller says.
Well, she's actually from Missouri originally, but she certainly served three terms in the corner office in the state Senate and has lived in New Hampshire for years and years. This is already scorched earth between these two campaigns, and, you know, we saw a fusillade of tweets from her campaign last night. Essentially, I didn't just move here. I'm here to make a difference for New Hampshire. No matter where Scott Brown lives, he's going to put Scott Brown first, not you, is the bottom line from the Shaheen camp, that Scott Brown is self-interested and not to be trusted. This race is going to be nasty, and there's going to be a lot of money invested. There's already been millions flowing in from outside the state, and it will likely be the most expensive Senate race or election period probably in New Hampshire history.
Wow. And Dante, in a minute, I want to ask you about the outside money since Josh raised it. But let's hear what Senator Sheehan said last night.
But no matter where Scott Brown lives, he's going to put Scott Brown first. Not you, not your family, and not New Hampshire. Just look at his record. When Scott Brown was in the Senate representing Massachusetts, he was voting for big oil, not for the homegrown energy companies we have here in New Hampshire. He was voting for Wall Street and the big banks, not our small businesses having a hard time getting credit, not our consumers getting scammed by credit card companies, and not homeowners facing foreclosure.
Okay, and there's Senator Jean Shaheen already taking on her newly minted rival, former U.S. Senator Scott Brown from Massachusetts. Dante Scala, Josh Rogers mentioned the outside money that will play a role in this race. I'd love your thoughts on that as well.
Yes, certainly we've seen a lot of money on both sides already spent. You hear from the Shaheen campaign all about the Koch brothers and conservative super PACs and 501Cs coming into New Hampshire, and that's all true. But Jean Shaheen has allies of her own. You're already seeing ads from a group called Next Gen Climate, which is financed by a wealthy donor, environmentalist, who leans Democratic. So I suspect on both sides there's going to be a rough balance of forces as far as big money goes. But the key thing to keep in mind is Jean Shaheen enters the fall with a solid, not spectacular, but solid approval number among the voters of New Hampshire. She's still holding on, despite a deteriorating national environment for Democrats. She's still holding on to that magic 50% of the electorate who thinks she's doing a good job.
Well, Jonathan, thanks for the call. Again, you can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's a Facebook comment from James. He says, standing at the polls in Greenville, I was impressed with how few people were showing up to vote. Is a vote by the self-selected few really democratic at all? So, Dante, what do you think? Here's a comment from James talking about the low turnout.
Right, and I think he's onto something, because we don't have the final results in yet, but back of the envelope estimate looks like Republican turnout fell, significantly short of what Secretary of State Bill Gardner thought. He was predicting about 140,000 turnout. I suspect it's going to be closer to 120,000 Republicans, and then those undeclared voters who took the Republican ballot. And of course, on the Democratic side, it was far worse than that. Now, of course, with a couple of exceptions, they had very few competitive races going on. But it wasn't a high-voltage Republican primary like, say, 2002 was, or even 2010.
Let's talk about the governor's race. And Kathleen Ronan, I'll turn to you first. One of you said earlier that the primary between Walt Havenstein, a businessman and entrepreneur, and more Liberty Caucus, I think he was with the House Republican Alliance, Andrew Hemingway, fizzled out. That Tea Party challenge from Andrew Hemingway kind of fizzled out. What happened there? What do you think, Kathleen?
Well, I think that from the beginning, Walt just had a lot more money than Andrew did. Walt was up on TV with three different ads. He did three different pieces of direct mail. I mean, I think he spent $1.2 million leading up to the primary, where Andrew Hemingway spent about $70,000. So, I think that Andrew did run a strong campaign, and Walt acknowledged that last night, but he just didn't have the resources to compete with Havenstein when it came to getting his message out there, name recognition. I think that he won. I think it was Walt won 57-37% of the vote.
That's a big margin.
And that was the biggest. I mean, Walt, he's only in a two-way primary, but he got more than any other Republican who won their race did. Last night he kept his message short to voters. He just talked about Maggie Hassan, talked about the economy. Hemingway was very gracious. He, called Walt, told him that he would support him. He would get his supporters behind him. We didn't see that kind of support gracious support in, you know, at least one of the other races, the U.S. Senate race. So I think that Hemingway is going to do what he can to get his people behind Walt. And I think that for Hemingway, there are only probably good things ahead for him, given that he is so young. He was a first-time candidate. People didn't really know what to expect out of him, given his kind of activist background. You know, he'd made some enemies within the more established part of the Republican Party. But I think he's worked really hard to change his image. And I think that, you know, we'll see what kind of force he is in the party going forward, and if he's been able to warm some of those relations that he had kind of, you know, that had gone poorly in the past, given some of his past activities.
Yeah. What can we expect from this race, Josh? Now we've got Walt Havenstein and Maggie Hassan, some of the themes and so forth.
Well, Havenstein says his focus is going to be on jobs and the economy, and we'll see how that goes for him. He's a first-time candidate. He, as Kathleen said, he probably exceeded expectations with his margin a little bit, and that's less you know, the expectations were probably what people expected from the start, but his campaign had been rocky. There have been missteps. You know, he's not, you know, greased lightning on the campaign trail. He didn't do terribly well in the last WMUR debate. It's tough to unseat an incumbent, and you know, Maggie Hassan made a speech last night, and you know, went after Havenstein for supporting you know, the Koch brothers' agenda, which is a, you know, obviously a buzzword we're now familiar with from Democrats, signing an Americans for Prosperity pledge to oppose Medicaid expansion, and you know, they're going to be one question is going to be, again, how much money do these people have at their disposal? Havenstein spent about, you know, $1.5 million of his own money so far. How much more he can invest is unclear. How much the Democratic and Republican governors' associations are going to get involved is unclear. Those groups spent, you know, a total of about $20 million here in 2010.
Really? Wow,
in the LaMontagne versus Hassan. Hassan is now the vice chair of the Democratic Governors Association, which puts her in a good position to get resources should she need them. The head of the RGA, Chris Christie, has endorsed Havenstein, has been up here for several reasons. He may have ulterior motives for, you know, coming with bags of money for the Republican nominee here. So that's going to be interesting to watch. But people who make these decisions, they don't want to waste money. And depending on if this race looks competitive, I guess we can expect money to come in from outside the state. You know, if not for Republicans, getting Havenstein in there is a relief for at least establishment Republicans, because they believe the pairing of, you know, Scott Brown, Walt Havenstein, another socially moderate, fiscally conservative Republican will stand them well and won't create a drag on the ticket, as we've seen in some years when Republicans have a weak candidate, particularly during the Lynch years, for example.
Well, and picking up on what Josh said, it is tough for any challenger to unseat, right, Kathleen, an incumbent governor. I mean, New Hampshire typically gives governors a second chance.
Yeah, it's tough to unseat a first-term incumbent governor. And I think, you know, we've seen from the beginning that Havenstein has an uphill battle here. I think to Josh's point that he's going to try and make his message about jobs in the economy, jobs in the economy. And I think the Democrats are going to try and do everything they can to pivot away from that and to make it about, you know, the Americans for Prosperity pledge, the Koch brothers. I think what should be interesting, later this month, we're going to see the spending numbers for fiscal year 2014. And that how those numbers come out could do a lot to really strengthen or weaken Havenstein's argument that Maggie Hassan can't manage the state budget, because Republicans have been kind of sounding the alarm. We need to see these numbers. We need to see if we, you know, spent within our limits. And so what happens with those numbers, I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily going to change the game for Havenstein, but it could help or hurt his argument about Maggie Hassan and her, you know, ability to manage the budget.
Her fiscal leadership.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Again, the number for you to join us here in the exchange with your questions about last night's primary results or your thoughts about the general election now shaping up, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page like James did. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So Dante Scala, one race where people thought it might be close, but it didn't turn out to be that close, was the first congressional district Republican primary between former Manchester mayor and former Congressman Frank Ginta and former UNH Business School Dean Dan Innes. So what do you think happened there, Dante?
Well, you know, of the major races, that turned out early last evening to be the one that remained in doubt the longest. Frank Ginta started Manchester results, as you might expect coming from the city with automated machines, came in early. And Frank Ginta in his hometown had a lead, but not a substantial one. It was about 8-10 percentage points. And that's basically how it stayed the rest of the evening. Ginta expanded his lead in Manchester somewhat and won with 53% of the vote. But Innes basically hung in there all evening. And over the last few weeks, his super PAC ally, a group called American Unity, had dumped a lot of political direct mail into Republican households in the district. And in addition, they had run a lot of advertising that both highlighted Innes in a positive way and went after Frank Ginta in a somewhat negative way. Their theme was that Carol Shea Porter and Frank Ginta had been a revolving door for most of the last decade and that the district needed new leadership. That, plus the union leader endorsement of Dan Innes, I think had some effect because you had a candidate with a pretty shallow history in the Republican Party who was, you know, moderate on social issues. Innes is openly gay and supports gay marriage. Also was somewhat pro-choice compared to Frank Ginta. So despite all that, he, you know, Innes had a pretty credible showing. That was the race, I believe, that was called last of all of them.
Yeah, Dan Innes did attract national attention, and as Dante says, some national money. I'd love your take on that too, Josh, please.
Well, people after the last election cycle, people were like, "Well, where is the Republican Party going to go? How can it become more diverse?" Gay candidates are something that are in short supply for the Republican Party. Dan Innes, you know, business background, fiscally conservative, you know, socially moderate, not likely to alienate segments of independent voters the way some staunch social conservatives did last time. And so he did receive national attention. And, you know, he ran a decent campaign. And I think Republicans say, you know, he could come back. He says he might. He obviously says he wants to return to maybe do some teaching at UNH where he was dean of the business school. And he owns a hotel in Portsmouth. And, you know, he indicated he's going to be focusing on that for a bit.
All right. Well, let's hear what Dan Innes said last night.
So you might wonder for me, what's next? The first thing is to get back to work on the hotel. Doug kind of wants that. And now I'm on record having said it, that I will help with that more than I was able to during the campaign. And back to UNH. I love teaching. I love the students. I don't know what more I'll do in higher education. I'll figure that out from the classroom. And politically, you might wonder what I might be doing. I guess I'll end this talk by saying, I'm not going to go away.
So there you have it. First district Republican contender Dan Innes, who lost by 8 percentage points or so to Frank Ginta last night, saying what you just said, Josh, you know, I might be back.
Well, one interesting result last night was the extent to which, a candidate we haven't mentioned that race, Brendan Kelly, he received, I think it was 8 or 9% of the vote. And that was pretty good given his low profile. And some have made the case that his participation as a libertarian in the last election, may have put Carol Shea Porter, over the hurdle by pulling votes from Ginta. But he actually did pretty well. And, you know, as far as Frank Ginta versus Carol Shea Porter goes, we've been there. It'll be interesting to see how different this is. I was interested to hear Frank Ginta say, you know, people want to end the gridlock in Washington. And, we'll see if either voters believe either he or Carol Shea Porter is the ticket to ending gridlock.
Well, speaking of, you know, sort of some of the same candidates coming around again, here's an email from Jack who says the Republican primary for Senate featured a reject from Massachusetts, Brown, a man who ran for governor 16 years ago, Rubens, and a former two-term senator rejected by primary voters 12 years ago. That would be Bob Smith. Jack says the first congressional race pits Ginta against Shea Porter, who are running against each other for the third time. With the exception of Marilinda Garcia in the second CD, new candidates for governor of Congress were soundly defeated. Jack says, you can't say the Republicans are against recycling. Jack, thanks for the email. The email address for you to join us, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Dante, let's turn to the 2nd Congressional District. There, boy, a pretty competitive race. Several key candidates, lots of lively debates, lots of attention to this race. But in the end, Marilinda Garcia came out way on top.
Yeah, that race seemed quite unsettled over the past couple of weeks. A lot of negative attacks between the winner, Marilinda Garcia, state representative from Salem, and the former state senator, Gary Lambert, from Nashua. And there was what made it interesting was there was a third candidate in the wings, former state representative Jim Lawrence, who by many accounts put in a very credible, positive performance in the three-way debate last week. And as the saying goes, he became the positive alternative to two squabbling fellow Republicans. So there was a lot of speculation about what might happen, but what was quite impressive was the ability of Garcia's organization to win all over a very large district, geographically speaking.
So it wasn't just she won in one area or the other area. She really took it all over the district.
Yeah, the first results came in from Concord, and when Garcia was putting up very good numbers in a city where you'd think you would find a more liberal to moderate Republican, and Garcia is clearly a conservative candidate, you had a sense of how the evening was going to go, and Garcia even did well in Lambert's home city of Nashua. So it was an impressive performance, and she, again, exceeded expectations for what people thought might be a close race.
All right, coming up in a moment, love your thoughts to Kathleen Ronayne on the 2nd Congressional District race, since you covered that race. And then we'll turn our attention to some key state Senate results and what they might tell us about the balance of power in the New Hampshire legislature next year. All that, plus your questions and comments, so give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, post-primary results. We're looking at who won, who lost, and why in yesterday's primary voting, and now how the general election is set up for November. Join us with your thoughts, questions, comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Our guest for the hour, Josh Rogers, NHPR senior political reporter, Kathleen Ronayne, State House reporter for the Concord Monitor, and Dante Scala, associate professor of political science at UNH and a fellow at UNH's Carsey School of Public Policy. Before we turn to state Senate races, folks, I did want to ask you too, Kathleen. You covered the 2nd Congressional District race pretty closely. Your thoughts there on Marilinda Garcia's decisive victory in the primary?
Yeah, I think what we saw is that Gary Lambert's attacks painting her as a liberal on Obamacare, on immigration, really didn't work. As Dante said, you know, she is a very conservative candidate, so I think it was a little bit of an uphill climb for Lambert to try to make those arguments. She also had a lot of outside help. She had Club for Growth airing ads on her behalf. She had Club for Growth sending out a lot of direct mail in the final week leading up to the campaign, painting Lambert as the liberal. You know, throughout the campaign, she touted the union leader endorsement quite a bit. She made sure to keep talking about that. I think that helped. And every chance she got, you know, during the debate on WMUR, she was consistently bringing up that, you know, independent fact checkers were calling Lambert's attacks against her lies and garbage. And so I think she did a really good job fending off those arguments from him. And the fact that she won by such a wide margin, I think, shows that, you know, from the beginning, that just wasn't really an effective attack message that Lambert was using against her.
And Dante, we had a caller who could not stay on, but who thought that Marilinda Garcia will help Republicans because she's female, young, and Latino. She helps Republicans with what our caller referred to and others have referred to as the Republicans' demographic issue.
I'm sure that's a lot of national Republicans agree with that sentiment this morning. And I suspect that of the two congressional districts, the second one is going to be the one that makes national headlines and that political reporters will be covering and that national Republican elites will be watching because Garcia does represent a new type of candidate for the Republican Party. So I suspect the outside money, maybe even presidential candidates, Ted Cruz, for example, who's been Texas senator, who's been touted as a presidential hopeful, was in for Garcia as a election eve. And I suspect there'll be more of that in the weeks to come.
Go ahead, Kathleen.
Yeah, someone said earlier that a lot of the Republican candidates who have won the top ticket primaries are fiscally conservative, a little more socially moderate. That's definitely not Garcia. She is a very conservative candidate. She's been endorsed by the Susan B. Anthony's List, which is an anti-abortion group. She's very socially conservative. So she doesn't exactly fit that same mold of Republican that Scott Brown and Walt Havenstein are coming from. So I think that we're going to see a lot of attacks probably on her for that. We've already seen the Democratic Party attacking her for not being strong on women's issues, even though she is a woman. So I think we're going to continue to see that message. And I think it's just really important to note that she's, unlike the other candidates, she is very socially conservative.
Josh?
Well, I would echo what Kathleen says. And certainly as far as issues that can help Custer rally her supporters, and you know, Annie Custer has background as a, I think she was a lobbyist for NARAL, that this is you know, abortion and abortion rights and contraception rights, these are big issues that can rally the Republican, the Democratic base, and you know, and certainly help you know, the whole ticket. But we're going to get a lot of that in the second CD race, and it's going to be interesting to see how much that drives voters there. I thought it was interesting that last night the Garcia campaign issued a challenge to Annie Custer to hold a public forum to discuss issues, and even offered to, you know, we'll do it when you can do it, and we'll even supply a driver to pick you up to make it easier for you to get there. And I think that what we're going to hear from Republicans across the ticket is casting Democrats as somehow out of touch, inaccessible, disinclined to meet voters face to face. And from Democrats, we're going to hear a lot of Republicans being cast as, you know, social extremists. And this is not a new message for from Democrats, but it's been an effective one. And we're certainly going to get it in CD2, where Marilinda Garcia is, as Kathleen says, is, you know, staunch social conservative.
Yeah, we heard that definitely in 2012. You know, picking up on something else Josh said, Dante Scala, turn to you. Republicans have been saying that Democrats, the incumbents here in New Hampshire, are out of touch and so forth. As Josh said, we've been hearing that from them. That's been especially a charge made against Senator Shaheen.
Certainly, we've seen Scott Brown, for instance, saying, I've had, you know, X number of town halls. How many town halls has Gene Shaheen had? Zero. And so there's been a lot of talk about Democrats running and hiding from the public. And I'm not sure how much of that plays out over the next several weeks. I mean, there will be debates and so forth. And so there's going to be more public exposure for all the candidates going forward. But you're seeing that with Garcia and Custer. You see that with Brown and Shaheen, that they'll be making that case that essentially Democrats are all about Washington, D.C., and that we're here trying to connect with the people of New Hampshire who those Democrats have forgotten. That's going to be one line that you'll hear that's going to go after those persuadable voters out there who aren't clearly Republican or clearly Democratic.
Again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, following up on last night's primary election results, and we're looking ahead to November. Join us 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So in the 10 minutes or so we have left, folks, let's focus on the state Senate. There were some interesting primaries for the state Senate yesterday. How about on the Republican side, Kathleen Ronayne? What were some of the big races yesterday?
Yeah, I think two of the top races to watch were David Booten's primary. He represents Hooksett, Bow, Dunbarton, and Nancy Stiles' primary over on the Seacoast. Nancy Stiles did win her primary against Steve Kenda. Booten, I'm not sure that it's been officially called, but as of right now, he is, I think he has 56% of the vote. That was interesting because both of those candidates had really been hammered by their conservative opponents as well as outside groups, Americans for Prosperity, for supporting Medicaid expansion and an increase in the gas tax. There was a lot of direct mail sent out, a lot of conservative activists that were really unhappy with those votes. But I think it says a lot that both of them were able to withstand that and hold on to their party's nomination. You know, Chuck Morris, Jeb Bradley, some of the state senators really Senate leaders were doing what they could to help out Booten and Stiles. And I think that the victory from both of those candidates does put, you know, Republicans in a stronger position to hold those seats in November. Their challengers were a bit more, much more conservative, especially in Senator Booten's district. So those were the interesting ones to watch. And, you know, again, the so-called establishment won those primaries.
Kind of like we talked about in the beginning with the major races. Josh, go ahead. Your thoughts on the state Senate?
Well, the races that Kathleen mentioned, I agree they were interesting. And I guess I was surprised to some degree the margin, at least in the people thought that Nancy Stiles was potentially vulnerable. She faced Steve Kenda. And it is worth noting, though, that in Nancy Stiles, well known in her community, had been a House member before being in the Senate. She won easily over a little known person in her district, really, and somebody who was supposed to spend a bunch of money, and I don't think spend a great deal of money. And in David Booten's case, he was facing Jane Cormier, who moved to his community from Alton, a House member, very conservative. And Booten and Stiles are known in their communities. Other races that were interesting were, you know, how to fill all the vacancies left by the retirements that went in.
Yeah.
Basically, Peter Bragdon left the Senate. That Republican primary was competitive. Gary Daniels, Milford House member for a long time, he carried that race. The race to succeed Bob O'Dell as the Republican standard bearer in the sort of New London area was interesting. Jerry Little, who was a former lobbyist for the Bankers Association, won that over more conservative challenger, J.P. Marzullo. The race to succeed Jim Rausch was very complicated, and we won't get into that, but Regina Birdsell won that race. That's a seat that's centered in Derry, very Republican. Certainly she's likely to be the senator. And then there was the one Democratic primary, which got a lot of attention here in Concord between Dan Feltes and Cass Arndinger to replace Sylvia Larson, former Senate president, Senate Democratic leader who's retiring. That turned out to be a real rout by Feltes, won every ward, every town, and that was one that really got Democrats in the Capitol area pretty animated.
Yeah, that was the one big race that Democrats had going yesterday. Dante, I want your thoughts, but Kathleen, you first. This big Democratic state Senate race, Josh is right, it got a lot of attention in this area.
Yeah, it did. I mean, Concord Democrats have not really had, you know, a contest to vote in for state Senate in 20 years. So a lot of excitement. Dan did have a very resounding victory. But what was impressive to me is how gracious Cass Arndinger was when she didn't win. She actually went over to Dan Feltes's election night party.
Wow.
And, you know, said that she was going to support him. And a lot of candidates don't do that. I mean, even candidates who say they're going to support the other person are not going to walk over to the party and, you know, show their face and accept defeat. And so I thought, just hearing about that, I think it was really classy and gracious of Cass to do that. And I think that we wouldn't have seen a lot of other candidates do that. So very interesting race. We know that seat's going to stay Democratic in the fall. Very progressive district. Dan brought a lot of progressive ideas to the table. I think people in Concord were looking for that energy, someone who they feel like is going to fight for them on their progressive issues. He's a former lobbyist for
New Hampshire Legal Assistance.
Yeah, New Hampshire Legal Assistance, low and middle income housing issues. And he, you know, I think from the beginning, people thought he might have been the underdog, but he really came out swinging. And we saw last night that he put in the work to run a very successful campaign.
By the way, Josh mentioned the Booten-Cormier race. It was very tight. We reported of single digits. The Union Leader reports that Senator Booten won by 155 votes, so pretty narrow there. Your broad thoughts, Dante Scala, please, on sort of the balance of power in the state Senate. Obviously too early to say, but what might these primary results foreshadow for that balance of power?
Yeah, one real quick interesting thing about Nancy Stiles. We think of Planned Parenthood, and we usually think of them as a group that's allied with the Democratic Party. But in that primary, they came out and dropped mail on behalf of Nancy Stiles, touting her concern with women's health issues, including access to abortion. So that was of interest. And I would say one with a balance of power, I think Republicans experienced something of a setback in hoping to extend their lead or majority in the Senate in the city of Manchester. On the one hand, you had David Booten, who went through a very bruising primary. I mean, Americans for Prosperity said they would hold Booten accountable for some of his votes, and they really held his feet to the fire. And Democrats there have most likely gotten a write-in candidate, an attorney, Maureen Manning, who served three terms in the State House, so fairly prominent Democrat, to be on the ballot. So on the one hand, they've got to defend that seat with a bruised incumbent, and then they were hoping to have put a big challenge to Donna Soucy in District 18, which is a seat that overlaps Manchester as well as Litchfield, and they wound up with a very conservative candidate, George Lambert, who's probably not going to be able to raise a lot of money. So all of a sudden, things have shifted a little bit in terms of what Republicans can hope to accomplish in November.
Yeah, well, closing out with all of you and looking ahead to November, what do you think, Dante? Big themes, big messages that we can expect to hear in the less than 2 months ahead. And if you have any thoughts, too, Dante, about money and where it might go, I'd love to hear those as well.
Yeah, well, broadly, it's going to be Republicans will try to nationalize the races, especially for federal office, and Democrats will try to localize it. You've seen that in Shaheen's advertising, touting the benefits she's brought home to the state as an incumbent, and you've heard that from Scott Brown. I mean, Scott Brown will try to take every issue, blame President Obama, and then tie Shaheen to Obama, and he's going to do that with whatever issue is most prominent. So you're going to see national versus local on the one hand, and as far as money goes, I suspect everyone, when all the dust settles, there'll be a lot of money on both sides spent, and that no one side will be at a serious disadvantage. And that probably includes Marilinda Garcia, whom, as Kathleen notes, is not a great fit ideologically for the district. But I think that those conservative groups are going to look at that seat and say, let's give it a try.
What do you think, Josh? Themes, thoughts, follow the money.
Well, I think Dante's onto something with the national versus local dynamic. I was talking to several Republicans of local consequence at the Scott Brown event, and I was like, well, you know, how are you feeling, guys? And they're like, well, you know, there are events around the world that, you know, have yet to unfold, and, you know, they were saying, you know, keep an eye on the president and keep an eye on what goes, you know, happens overseas, and, you know, they're still, you know, weeks away from the election, and, you know, what might seem the issue du jour now may be, in fact, the issue du jour. And so, you know, there's a long way to go, and but generally speaking, from the Democrats, it's going to be, you know, we're delivering for you and we have delivered for you. Look at this, that, and the other I've done. And for the Republicans, it's going to be, you know, the president is somebody that needs to be stopped. You know, we can do that.
Okay. And we'll be having a lot of forums and conversations with the candidates here at NHPR. So there'll be a lot of coverage if people want to find out more. How about you, Kathleen? What are you expecting to hear in the weeks ahead?
Yeah, I think I'm talking specifically about the governor's race. I'm interested to see what kind of message Maggie Hassan continues to create around her campaign. We've seen, you know, her most recent television ad. She's striking a very middle of the road, I'm a problem solver kind of message. You know, she's not being overly liberal with her message. I mean, her most recent ad, she's talking about promising to veto a sales or income tax, balancing the budget. So I think that's a message we're going to continue to see from her. And, you know, whether or not Walt's able to crack into that at all should be interesting.
Well, Kathleen, thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Kathleen Ronayne, State House reporter for the Concord Monitor. Dante Scala, thank you also for your time.
You're welcome, Laura.
Dante Scala, associate professor of political science at UNH, a fellow at UNH's Carsey School of Public Policy. Josh Rogers, thanks for making time out. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Laura.
Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter. The conversation continues on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Head over there, post a comment if you'd like. Also, there's a lot more election coverage on our website, nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.